eat.
Oh, so good.
Drink. Talk. Rick Redding and Steve Coombs serve up savory conversations about Louisville's world-famous restaurant food and drink scene. The wine is uncorked, the bourbon neat, the apps are on the table. Here comes the main course.
And here we are on Eat, Drink, Talk. Thank you for downloading the show and tuning in. This is Rick Redding. I'm here with my co-host, partner in crime, Steve Coombs. Steve?
Hello.
What's going on?
Man, it's been a tough week in the restaurant business. The biggest news, of course, is the closure of Doc's Cantina down there on the river. And is rumored to be a $3 million restaurant, employed about 100 people, closed after a little bit less than 6 months in operation. And wow. It was a rough ride from the start and to the finish.
Yeah, it seems like. I thought it was interesting the way the way they released the news. Now, I know you were in on it beforehand, got the scoop, and we were, you know, certainly if you had a clock on it, you know, but everybody, you know, almost everybody in town at 11 a.m. on Monday, you know, that was the lead story in most media outlets.
Right.
So, you know, that's a big story. I guess they put some strategy into how they're going to announce that.
They did. I mean, they want to make sure that all their employees knew first, and that's good. Yeah, I didn't even think to ask whether there was any severance for people who were leaving, but the staff had been drastically pared back. You know, with they had cut lunches out, they had tightened up operations hours and things like that. So it's sad. I mean, these are successful restaurateurs. These were not amateurs.
It proves it in the piece I wrote this week about closings. It doesn't matter what size you are, how much experience you have. Getting all the aspects of operating a successful and profitable restaurant business are difficult.
Absolutely. Competitive environment. But, I mean, that they thought they had a unique selling proposition, and it wasn't something that resonated with customers, so they're going to start over, and they've taken the blame. They're not blaming anybody else for it.
Yeah, and that's refreshing. Although, you know, down there, it seems like such a great location. And it seems like even when Tumbleweed was there, you know, they never lacked for crowds. You know, I always thought there was something with the management at the Tumbleweed because there were always a lot of people down there.
Yeah, they did. I mean, reportedly between $3 and $5 million a year in sales when they were there. So, and that was one of the questions that Chip Hamm, basically the CEO of Falls City Hospitality Group, he had said, if they can do it, why couldn't we?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Again, it's our fault, is what he was saying.
Well, kudos to you for having the best and most in-depth story on that closing of all the local media that I saw. And you also know something about Eric David Gould, the redneck Jew.
Oh, my gosh. He was such a funny, pleasant, quirky guy who did really good Southern food, great barbecue, fried fish. It's been a while since I was down there, I must admit. But I enjoyed it the couple times that I went, and his wife, Lynn, is just a real sweetheart. I've never gotten to meet her, but I've interviewed her a couple times. She just sounds like a cool lady and a challenging neighborhood. They made it for 7 years.
I know. I mean, it's really hard to tell somebody how to get there, you know, and that's if you're successful in a spot like that. And I would say, even though they closed, it's in the way that he announced the closing, it's not like we were failing. It was, I'm going to go do something else.
Right. Yeah. And I hope that's good. I hope that means they made all they needed. He said they accomplished their goals with the business, and
yeah,
hopefully that means profitability and, you know, put a couple of bucks in between the mattresses and did okay.
We'll see how that goes. Well, not to go on with that, but I did notice out in my neighborhood, you know, I live in J-Town, but out in Fern Creek, there's this little restaurant, and it has been operating for 2 years. I always wondered about it. I'm mad at myself for never going in, but Merrick's. You know anything about them?
Not a thing. I mean, not until you had mentioned it. That's what happens when there's a reporter on the ground.
That's right. You're just reporting by driving by.
I'll tell you, old school.
But, no, it seemed to be have plenty of business. I looked on their website, and they're very optimistic. But they've only been open 2 years. And interestingly, one day they were open, and the next day there was a sign that said, business is for sale, and they were closed. So that's what happens in the restaurant business, I guess.
But, you know, more prominent near Fern Creek, I guess J-Town, as we call it, that Applebee's had closed. And I know that a lot of our listeners probably don't frequent Applebee's often, but, I mean, those are expensive properties, and they make sizable investments, seven-figure investments into those restaurants.
Well, it's surprising to see one of those Hurstbourne Parkway, like between Shelbyville Road and Taylorsville Road on Hurstbourne Parkway.
Chain. Yeah.
Absolutely. There are a bunch of them, and they all seem to always have a lot of people in them. So
right. Yeah. You can't knock it.
And it was interesting. I went up and looked at the sign on the door, and it said that that location of Applebee's was unable to attain profitability. And telling you to go to their other Applebee's stores. And you know, I'm thinking, in the middle of Hurstbourne Parkway, where all that traffic is, can't make a profit.
Costly real estate, though, too, I would imagine.
I guess so.
They can buy those A locations or rent those A locations. So, but, I mean, and it just we'll only touch on this briefly, that is a bellwether of what's going on nationally in the casual dining segment. This will not be the last closure we're going to see of a chain restaurant in this town.
Exactly, but as I also pointed out in my story, there's a bunch of restaurants still opening. So, you know, the Food and Dining reported a whole bunch of like small neighborhood type small restaurants are opening. So people that are entrepreneurs, they still want to take that chance.
Right. And I did read an extensive report from Nation's Restaurant News yesterday talking about how the stock market is starting to punish restaurant companies. You know, they're bearish on them now. So. You know, yet again, it's that emperor may not have no clothes, but but he's got some sheer undergarments, it appears, right now.
All right. Well, I wanted to ask you about this story you were telling me about Sullivan, a very unusual move made over there. Elaborate for me.
Well, Derek Spendlove, I believe, had 28 years as a chef instructor there, and he was let go. Apparently, just like Joe Castro and Kim Jones, other very long tenured chef instructors were last year, I believe. It appears that the school is not talking about this. It's just letting go of the longer term people who probably have, you know, the most sizable salaries. You know, they're trying to cut costs. Enrollment is down, which is a national trend also for culinary schools. It's very expensive. Spendlove is legendary. The guy had taken multiple student teams to culinary Olympics and done really well. He is the only certified master pastry chef who is American, you know, are certified in America. It used to be a French thing. But, I mean, there are less than 100 of those in the world. I mean, the dude's a super talent.
Wow.
Where
do you think a guy like that ends up?
I don't know. You know, I'm in my 50s. I would think he's in his early 60s. Maybe he's done. Maybe he consults. I don't know. But unfortunately, he declined to talk or did not respond to requests for an interview. So I would imagine he's not happy about the whole thing.
Yeah,
but,
I remember that Culinary Olympics thing. They made a big deal about that. When that happened, I recall. So, wow.
I mean, that would be akin to letting go, say, the head of University of Louisville's business school or something. Yeah. It's a significant.
And it sounds like what happens in TV news. They get rid of the older anchors, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because they're making too much money.
That's right, despite their experience that they bring to the.
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes that experience is not valued the way it should be. Editorial comment by me.
And hence, they wind up starting podcasts.
Yeah. Sometimes they have to go back to the drawing board and do it on their own. So that's fun. Well, speaking of fun, we had a lot of fun yesterday. We went to the press VIP opening of Total Wine and More store.
Right.
And, man, I don't think I've ever seen that much alcohol in one place.
No. Not since your last fraternity party 40 years ago, right? And certainly not the variety.
We didn't have the quality. We had the low end.
but quantity, yeah, possibly. Yeah, I mean, it's a gorgeous store, isn't it?
It's beautiful. And you can get a $3 bottle of wine there. So, you know, if your taste, so they call it the value space.
That's right. Or as our colleague in the trade, Ron Mikulak, called it the plonk. I've never heard of the plonk.
I hadn't either.
But I mean the thousands of wines, 2,500 beers. I can't remember how many different spirits. It was amazing. But the bourbon thing, we were all looking at prices, and we saw that they're really taking a shot at the bourbon drinker by lowering prices well below market rate here in Louisville, and maybe 25% of the bottles that I saw.
Yeah. And you know, when I go out and buy. You know, spirits or something. I always notice a lot of liquor stores, they're all, there's not like a really bargain, and I got a little insight into why, because Mark, the guide over there yesterday said, you know, we'd like to sell some stuff below cost, but we're prohibited by law.
That's right, right? But he said, but we have no problem running right up against the line.
He goes right up against it. So I think you'll find that it may be like going to like a Sam's or a Costco. On certain items, you're really going to get a great, great deal. And other items are going to be like everybody else.
Just call the sales mix. That's the only term. I mean, there were things that I bought last night. I went back to the actual VIP, the grand opening, and there were a lot of things that I saw price-wise that were better than some of the places I normally shop, and there were ones that were a little bit higher. Some were drastically lower. Maybe I didn't even want those, but. I think overall it's going to play out, and people will either find that a great value to go to, or, you know, the only drawback that I saw is inconvenient to get into and out of the paddock.
Yeah, the paddock, even there's a lot of stuff out there. It's a really cool place to go shopping. So, you know, I was out there last week. We'll talk about that later in the show. But we want to move on to our get into our interviews, and you had a great one, sort of a newsy story about Bistro 301.
And in fact, I should write about that, because that's worth doing. Doug Prather is the new owner of Bistro 301. He bought the property from Matt and Molly Mershon, who had owned it for, I don't know, a dozen years after John DeCamillis, you know, had stopped being a restaurateur and became a landlord instead with Deeks. Doug comes from an extensive chain background, and most recently he was the general manager down at Eddie Merlot's up on the end of 4th Street Live, and very successful, really smart guy, who said to me in the interview, basically, this is an undervalued property, undervalued brand that has not gotten the treatment that it needs to be truly successful. So he's on fire for it. He got it at a bargain. He didn't disclose the price. But the Mershons were done. They're ready to be out of the business.
Well, it seems like such a great spot, and you don't hear a lot of people talking about it. Maybe that'll change with the convention center going up right across the street.
Well, but he sees that as an opportunity. He says I'm going to serve those people box lunches all day freaking long if I have to. So he's not afraid of it.
All right. Well, that's great. Well, let's go on to the interview. Steve and I will be back with our favorite eats and drinks of the week after you hear from Steve's talk with Doug Prather.
Rick Redding has his ear to the ground on Louisville news, issues, and media. Get a new episode every Thursday at Louisville.am.
I am in Bistro 301 with its new owner, Doug Prather. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. This restaurant's been around a long time. We were chatting a moment ago about it. It used to start off as Deeks, and then it became Bistro 301 with Matt and Molly Mershon, who have decided after, I think you said, 15 years
about
or 19
15 years
to get out of the business. And here comes the new blood, who's you're young and energetic, and you're from Eddie Merlot's of late, right?
Yeah, general manager Eddie Merlot's here in Louisville for the past year and a half, a little more.
So where'd you come from?
When I moved, I'm originally from Elizabethtown, Kentucky, so this is kind of home base for me. But
sure.
I actually, the year before I started with Eddie Merlot's, my wife got offered a promotion with Jay Alexander's to go to Boca Raton for a year.
Right.
We didn't want to move there permanently, but they said you can go for a year and then we'll move you somewhere else. So I went and I worked for two independent restaurateurs, one for 6 months, the other for 6 months, just to learn the independent business because I'd never done it.
Wow, it's a commitment.
They're both really good companies, or restaurateurs, I guess, or small, in totally different ways. So I learned a lot from both of them. One of them is extremely tight financially to a fault, and the other people spend so much money to do it right that you really learn a little something from it. So it was a good experience. But I worked on the beach in Fort Lauderdale for 6 months, and I worked in a really nice shopping center right in the middle of Boca Raton for 6 months. So they were very nice.
And we were talking that you had spent many years with McCormick and Schmick's.
McCormick and
Schmick's. High-end beef and seafood chain.
It's great seafood. You know, I was a proprietor of Bonefish Grill. Went from Bonefish to McCormick & Schmick's because it's kind of a natural progression and check average and the quality. So I was a GM in Cincinnati, then 2 years a GM in Columbus, and then 2 more years a GM in the D.C. market with them. So a lot of seafood in my background for sure.
So now, obviously, Eddie Merlot is quite a bit different in terms of its scale of formality to this. Did you want to get down to something casual like Bistro 301?
I do like casual. I'm loud and fun. You know, I like to have fun when I'm at work. That's mm-hmm. why I do it. I couldn't really see myself in another business because this is what I like to do. I like to throw a party every day. If I won the lottery, I would entertain at my house every day. I would cook and make drinks. And so this is like...
And I would show up and eat and drink your lottery money.
It would be great. It would be great. So, you know, basically I wanted to find the right place and what I feel like the right time is. This is only the second restaurant I've ever contemplated buying. The first one was St. Charles Exchange almost uh-huh. a year ago,
uh-huh.
And they picked a more established company, obviously, to go into that space. They didn't know me.
Muscle and Burger. Yeah.
But I think that, you know, what I had in mind for that and what could have happened with that place, I think I was on the right track.
Right.
And that gave me almost another year to kind of look and find this place. And to me, I feel like that I'm getting a great staff, a location that's in the heart of everything that's about to be. It's already the heart of downtown, but it's really about to be a new kind of city. And I think that we'll be poised to, you know, recreate Bistro 301 in whatever small ways we're going to do it.
That brings up a good question. This is a legacy restaurant with a reputation for being a bit eclectic. The menu's kind of all over the place right now.
Spread out.
So what is it about this place that you want to keep, and maybe what is it about that you want to change?
Well, I like the name. You know, I don't think that rebranding is financially responsible. It's mm-hmm. got a good name in the city. People know it. The lunch business is really steady. I really don't think that there's much changing that needs to happen mm-hmm. at lunch. You know, maybe we do some rotation of menu items and things like that seasonally, but I've been threatened with my life on certain items that they cannot come off the menu.
What are those? Some of the favorites.
The tortellini Diablo is uh-huh. like everybody loves it.
Uh-huh.
Even if they put a new menu out and they move it from one location on the menu to another, people freak out because they think it's gone. So I'm not messing with the Diablo.
Those are creatures of habit.
They
for sure,
are.
Aren't they?
They are. Yeah. But we sell a lot of it. It's very popular. You know, we're on the Hot Brown Trail, so we want to embrace
right.
the Hot Brown.
What's the uniqueness about 301? I know there's some little twist.
Well, the whole thing's kind of is built together. It's got the bread in the bottom, sauced over, a ton of cheese on top of the sauce, and then they melt and put the bacon and tomato on it. But it's all in a crock, so you got to dig down to get to the bread. It's not like an open face sandwich. It's the bread's underneath it all.
Okay. Yeah, everybody on the trail has something that you need.
Yeah, it's really good. You know, it's a lot, but even in the summertime, we sell it. So,
what would you like to change? I mean, the course, cool. I mean, it's fun. It's open.
It's nice. I don't like is the fact that you can kind of tell now. But if there were 10 more people in here, this is like an echo chamber. There's
right.
no soft structure in here to break up the sound. So we're working on coming up with a new type of interior design that will break up the sound and baffle it a little. So when you're here before the theater or whatever it might be on celebrating a special occasion for dinner, you don't want to have to be shouting over everyone.
Yeah.
So we're going to upgrade the things like that need to be done. We're upgrading the bathrooms. We're upgrading the AV system. You know, that stuff's important, that it has that it looks fresh and relevant.
I mean, all those touches are definitely part of your past in those kinds of restaurants. Do you think that it's not the formal touch you want to bring, but kind of a polished look to it, I guess?
Definitely. You know, one of the taglines that they've used in the past, and I think that it's where we need to continue to grow, was Bonefish considered themselves a polished casual
uh-huh.
Restaurant group. And I feel like the tagline they had in the past was upscale casual dining in the heart of downtown Louisville. And I
uh-huh.
feel like it's casual. At lunch, it's really casual. At dinner, we'll probably get a little more upscale. We're not going to take things off and just raise prices, but we're going to offer people the opportunity to spend money and really indulge if they want to. We'll have some better bottles of wine, and we'll have some nicer cuts of meat or great seafood specials that if people want to spend it, they can. But at the same time, they can come in and still have their casual, affordable dinner and hit the theater after and not spend a ton of money.
Now, you mentioned something really important earlier about this long-term staff, that it has not the restaurant has not endured the turnover that you see at a lot of other places. Talk about their loyalty. Why are they like that with this?
They're extremely loyal to Matt and John DeCamillis, who owned Deep Marketplace.
He still owns the building?
He still owns the building. Uh-huh. He's a landlord, so I'll at least get to see him once a month. But, you know, our chef Charlie's been here for 17, 18, 19 years since it was Deke's. Another guy in the kitchen, Ray's been here 15 years. We have a dishwasher that's been here 11 years.
A dishwasher. People don't understand how valuable that is.
One lady, Socorro, she's been here 11 years. And, you know, service staff, bartenders, everyone has been here a long time. And the loyalty partly lies because Matt was a real people pleaser. So he definitely takes care of his people. Well, that's great.
That's good to hear.
Yeah, because I believe in the same things. You know, I think if you take care of your employees, that they'll take care of the rest. And I've always managed that way, and it's always worked out. The financials, everything else comes in line if you take care of your employees, because they're going to want to do the right thing for you. It's been a successful endeavor, to say the least.
Now, that's a cool bar out there. Do you plan on changing or upgrading anything in the bar program cocktail-wise?
We're definitely going to look at cocktails soon. My goal date is to have a new happy hour in place by October 1st. It will be from 3 to 7, and it will be fairly aggressively priced during happy hour on food items.
Nice.
And good, reasonable drink pricing. I think our drink program at happy hour is pretty good, but we don't have a bar menu at all. So we'll have a bar menu, and that menu will be discounted pretty heavily at happy hour. Probably, I think we're going to do half off of the bar menu food during happy hour. So it's pretty aggressive for the city, I think. And
now, my guess is you'll need some of that as this construction on the convention center directly across the street really starts to trim the traffic here. What's your plan for compensating
that? Well, the good news is I met the gentleman who's in charge of demolition, and he says there's going to be between 100 and 1,000 people working over there every day for the next 2 years.
Wow.
I've already been seeing yellow shirts in here at lunchtime, for sure.
Oh, excellent.
We've seen some people in that we believe were maybe foremans or something coming in at 9, so probably done for the day, coming in to catch up on what they got accomplished. So I feel like we're going to definitely pick up some business from the construction people. We're going to do deliveries. We're going to do box lunches. We're going to do whatever they need us to do. But we're gonna get some of that to offset it. And then I think that if we revive a lot of the things that we were doing in the past as Bistro 301, they were doing deliveries to hotels and a lot more catering events or just drop-off catering.
Right.
I think we'll revive a little bit of that with the new energy, and I don't think we'll suffer. I think that we'll be a for-profit business until the convention center opens. And I think after the convention center and the Omni, and I guess they just announced a couple other hotels that are coming too, that I think then will be really postured well for profitability.
So you're looking at this as a long-term, long-run project.
I am. I feel like, you know, this is just the beginning. I want to do more in the city of Louisville. I want to have more properties and be involved in some other things. But I think this is the keystone. This is where it all starts. And I was very fortunate to get in front of Matt before he put the place up for sale. And luckily, two of my assistant managers, Eddie Merlot's, used to work here as his managers. And they got me in contact with him because I always just liked the spot.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even for sale. And we just started talking about it in April of this year, and we started talking about it again, you know, just a month ago, and got it all done pretty quick. So
timing is everything, isn't it?
It is. I got lucky. He was ready to give it out, and luckily I had Hunter and Leo to vouch for me that I managed a lot like him, that his people would be safe. I wouldn't come in and just tear everything apart and start from scratch and get a bunch of new employees, because that's work. That's not necessary with the people we have here.
Well, that's great to hear. Doug Prather, congratulations on your new purchase, and thanks for being on Eat, Drink, Talk.
Thank you. Thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
Excuse me, garçon. I'll have another.
We're back in the studio with Eat, Drink, Talk, and this is a great part of our show where we get to talk about our sponsor, the Eye Care Institute.
Exactly. I did the Rusty Satellite Show yesterday. I had Erin Jones in here, and her mother had a problem with her eye. I think some sort of technical term that I'm not familiar with, but I said, well, you know what? iCare Institute is the place where people with, you know, real special sort of problems with their eyes go. It's they're the best in town.
I thought you were going to say Erin did. No. Poor Erin, those baby blues. I mean, really? She doesn't need any work on those.
She's looking great, and she was a great co-host, and not as good as you, Steve, but she was good.
Well, I like Erin pretty well. I'm sure she was just the tops.
She was great. We actually went out to lunch at Simply Thai afterwards.
I like that place.
Yeah, it's really good.
I like that place.
It's really good. So, anyway.
So we also touch on this part of the show, or visiting this part of the show, our favorite eats and drinks of the past week, and there was no shortage of that, was there?
We seem to have a really good time. What do you say we need an eat-drink talk like dietitian or something?
Like, staff dietitian to try to tell us, you know, or check our livers and check our body mass and all that good stuff and say, fellas, maybe you need to start covering business or something.
You're fit for a soft opening. Go.
Because you're really soft. You know, my favorite drink of the week was at Mesh. I went out to the patio bar. I had not been there yet, and it was a really nice warm fall day. Gosh, I love fall in Kentucky. It's just brilliant. But the drink was Plum Crazy, and it was made from tequila, blackberry liqueur, plum and ginger syrup, and a squeeze each of lime and lemon. And it was fantastic. I'd highly recommend it.
Wow, that sounds that's good. I have to get over there. I pass by it all the time and haven't been in yet. So,
well, when you go there, don't expect to see bourbon prices on the drink menu.
Oh, really?
I was really surprised. I mean, they have an extensive whiskey selection, and there were no prices. And the bartender couldn't answer why. And I even texted the company owner, Michael Cunningham, and I said, why are there no prices on the menu? And he said, I'll look into it. That's the last I heard.
You say, I thought that meant they were free.
I should have, and then I'd probably gotten crickets. But, you know, I guess, you know, that Indian Hills location, people don't really have to worry about the price. They just say, give me that on the rocks.
All right. Well, our favorite drinks are often associated with things that are great atmosphere and great things to do. Last Friday, I went to, of all places, Drake's, because it was close to the KCD Theater, where my main man, favorite musician Paul Thorne, was doing a show. It was great, but beforehand, I didn't really want to drink a beer, and we were having their great sushi over there, and thinking about my girlish figure, I had a skinny margarita, and you know, no girls made fun of me or anything, but it was
not until you left.
Not until I left. But they do. It is a little different than your regular margarita. It's served in a tall, skinny glass with ice, and
How did it compare to a regular margarita?
Well, it wasn't very similar, actually. You know, there's no salt. It wasn't green. It was sort of clear, and it went down easy. I had two of them.
which kind of added up to one fatty margarita.
Yeah, exactly.
Would be my thing.
I don't think I really am going to lose any poundage by doing that. But
what was your favorite eat? Also came from Drake's as well.
Well, no. I mean, I love the sushi there, which, you know, it's sort of an unknown that, you know, Drake's serves some great sushi.
Yeah, the gaijin making the sushi.
Yeah. We had the Red Dragon special, and it was great. So I like that. But let's talk about my favorite eat next, leading into the interview,
because that's what it's
about. Let's hear about yours.
Mine was a little bit crazy, and it was fantastic. Down at the Oak Room, I got to go last Friday night for their soft opening, as my wife and I were guests of the restaurant. And we had a charred octopus served over harissa and Israeli couscous, and it was absolutely fantastic. That can be a tough chew sometime, but it was just – it was brilliant. Nick Sullivan, the chef de cuisine down there, was really showing his mad skills. And this is the grand reopening of the restaurant, which they shut down for about 2 months.
Yeah, I remember. That was a big story we had when they surprisingly shut down.
Yeah, then real quickly, the menu is is just two pages. The one on the left is small plates. The one on the right is mains. And the small plates are really, really affordable for that setting. So I would strongly advise people go down there, eat some small plates, have a sealback cocktail, which is excellent, and maybe then run out on the, you know, 4th Street and go to some other places.
Yeah, there's all kinds of choices down there. Well, the reason I wanted to wait because I had lunch at the cafe down, and it's really sort of off the beaten path, even though it's right downtown. And because I was doing our Eat, Drink, Talk interview with an old buddy of yours, Sal Rubino.
Salvatore. Did his wife Cindy join in?
She did not join in. Oh. I guess you know, we talked about that. He said we got a great situation. I'm front of the house. She does the cooking.
She always has. Yeah. They've owned two other restaurants, Rubino's, and the cafe's been under their name for a long time.
Yeah, so they're celebrating 20 years as the cafe. Wow. Cafe, and that's sort of the occasion that they're not really doing anything special. I was in there on like a Tuesday. They had a good lunch crowd. People just kept coming in.
Super place for breakfast.
There's a lot of people that know about it. They're open from 7 to 4. And it's really great. And so at the conclusion of the interview, I said, Sal, I'm going to have lunch. What should I have? And he said, well, the only thing on the menu that I created is the roasted Tuscan chicken salad. And, you know, it was certainly a meal in itself. It was a big old salad, had like 10 ingredients in it, including some like apple slices around the side, some chicken in there. It was sort of warm in the middle, and all the, you know, all the accoutrements of a great salad were in there. And so I just really enjoyed it. I'm glad I took his recommendation.
He's a good dude. I've known him since 1981.
He talked about how bad you were in the kitchen.
He didn't have to suffer my kitchen cooking. He and I worked. I was a busboy below him, and then he left to go to Mama Grazzani as general manager, if anybody remembers that restaurant. And so he never – I don't think he ever had to be tortured under my cooking.
Well, I think our listeners will enjoy hearing Sal reminisce about some of the long gone restaurant names in this community.
Yeah.
I asked him about, and so I think in terms of that aspect, we see all these restaurants coming and going. Here's a guy who's been there for the duration and is a consummate restaurant
pro. Absolutely gracious host, and you know, Cindy always stays in the back and does her thing, but she's still just a sweetheart. I did get to cook with her very briefly.
All right, well, we'll get on with that and tell our listeners to thank you once again. Please tell your friends about eatdrinktalk.net, the website. Steve, we got some great stories on there, right?
Absolutely. Especially your piece on the restaurant closures, and there's one on Total Wine that should be up today. So,
should be.
We're excited.
if I get going on that. And there's a story on the Oak Room. There's plenty of scoops. We're getting a lot of the stories about restaurants first in this community, in this media market, and we're really proud of that. So I hope you will check out the site and tell your friends, and listen to the podcast each and every week with Steve Coombs.
And when you're not looking at our site, take your eyes down to the Eye Care Institute.
There you go. Eye Care Institute is a great sponsor of ours. We're adding another sponsor in the very near future, and we're very happy about that. There's some big news on the horizon for Eat, Drink, Talk. So we're very excited about that. But right now, we're going to get out of the way and let you listen to my interview with Sal Rubino.
Hey, I'm Dan Vonderhyde.
I'm Stephanie White.
We host a weekly podcast called 40-ish. It's a show about life at middle age.
I'm not 40 yet.
Well, you're getting there eventually.
I guess.
So each week, we talk about something that applies to the life of a middle-aged person. We drop a little bit of wisdom in every episode, and we go out and talk to people about their experiences.
And we laugh.
And we laugh a lot. Comes out every Tuesday. Make sure you download.
Tune in.
And today I'm in one of Louisville's finest and little-known out-of-the-way restaurants. I guess Sal Rubino is with me. Sal, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Hey, this is a really great place. This is my first time in here, and I just found out you've been here 20 years.
Exactly.
Wow. Well, what have I been doing?
We're not exactly on the beaten path.
Hey, tell me, I'll let you tell. How do you tell people how to get here?
Well, we're simply one block south of Broadway and one block west of Barrett Avenue.
Okay.
So if you know those two very well-known streets, you can navigate to us.
Yes. Okay. And you know, it's a big deal to celebrate a 20-year anniversary, but you've been in the restaurant business in this town a lot longer than that.
Yeah, for 35 years.
Wow, 35 years.
And been in the restaurant business for 40-plus years, so... But in Louisville for past 35.
Yeah. Well, I was reading your background. You're certainly, you know, you spent time in Miami, and and you're from the Northeast, right?
Yes, New York.
And Louisville would seem to be from the outside an odd place to settle down and spend that. It's been decades.
Right. Well, my wife is from Louisville. She's born and raised here in Louisville, and we met in Miami, Florida, where we studied restaurant management.
Okay.
So we met in college and got married and settled in her hometown.
Okay. Okay. So, who's the better cook?
She's the chef. I won't even go there. I enjoy cooking, but that's where we kind of complement one another. I'm the front of the house guy, hospitality, marketing, human resources, kind of the face of the cafe, and she's the brains of the operation and the creative genius in the kitchen.
Yeah, well, there you go. Well, I mean, 20 years right here, I guess you've seen some ups and downs.
We have. We actually started in 1996 at the Louisville Antique Mall on Goss Avenue.
Okay.
So we operated there for 12 years and relocated this current location about 9 years ago.
Okay.
And so we reopened here in 2007, in October of 2007. So.
Okay.
But we started at the cafe at the Louisville Antique Mall in 1996. But the same menu, same format, everything's the same. Just we started out very small. We started out with only about six tables, about 12 seats.
Okay.
She was in the kitchen. I was out front. I was the waiter, the only two people in the cafe.
Well,
and
this is certainly bigger than that.
We've grown organically over those past 20 years.
Okay. And is, you said 7 to what time?
We open at 7 a.m. Monday through Saturday, and we serve until 4 p.m., breakfast and lunch.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, very cool. Well, you got a nice patio out there. I'm sure people use that. Are you doing anything to tell me? What are you doing to celebrate the anniversary?
You know, we have been all about, you know, we're not big in marketing. We're not big in advertising or promotions, but we have been serving a high quality product at a reasonable price for all this time. So we thought we'd just share by sending out the press release, letting people know that we've been in business for 20 years,
yeah.
and not really doing any kind of promotion around that, but just kind of celebrating the fact that we're still in business after
yeah.
all these years.
Well, there you go. Well, you know, everybody talks about Louisville being a restaurant town and,
yep.
and all that, but it seems like the new guys get all the publicity, right?
Right. You said it. You said it.
But being steady and as it goes, I mean, do you what changes have you witnessed? I mean, it seems like there's a resurgence now, but maybe that's just all we're hearing in the news.
Right.
In terms of restaurants.
Well, as I mentioned, I've been in the restaurant business in this town for 35 years, and through that time, I've seen a lot of restaurants open and close. We had another restaurant called Rubino's, and it was a seafood pasta place.
I remember that in Middletown.
Yeah, we had one in Middletown and one in DuPont Circle. We opened in 88 and sold it in 96 to start the cafe. And, you know, during that time, I can remember many other restaurants, seafood restaurants, for example, like T.W. Sharkey's opened in St. Matthews. There was L&N Seafood. There was Stan's Fish Sandwich. There was all kinds of restaurants that opened in and around that time, and most of them are closed.
Yeah.
And that still goes today. There's just it's a different faces on the scene. There's a lot of new farm-to-table restaurants, a lot of new ethnic restaurants in the city that we didn't have before. You know, like Havana Rumba is a great restaurant. It's got multiple concepts, multiple locations, and they're doing a great job. They weren't here when we started 20 years ago, but they're new on the scene and strong. So it's a vibrant and changing restaurant scene in Louisville, and we're glad to be a part of it.
Yeah. Now, I understand you, since he's not here, we'll talk about him. My partner, Steve Coombs, you actually work with him in a restaurant, right?
We did. We started together at Mama Grassani's back in the early 80s, and I was a general manager of Mama's, and Steve was, I think at the time, a busboy. He was still a young kid, and later became a waiter and on to working in kitchens and so forth, and then he went to... he got smart, went to school, and
you told him to get out of the kitchen, right?
And became a writer. And I think I understand he's a fabulous writer.
Well, he does very well for us, and we're glad to have him. And I think his writing is certainly influenced by his time working with people like you and some of the giants in the industry that were connected to that restaurant, right?
That's right.
Who were some of the other folks there?
Well, Dean Corbett has got Corbett's and a few other restaurants, and then Frank Yang and Dominic Serratori have Ditto's, and Tim Corey, who's got Porcini, mm-hmm. Majid Ghavami, who's got Majid's in St. Matthews, Mirzad, who's got the Oyster Bar out yeah. in Whittington Parkway. I mean, there's just endless.
I can imagine all those endless. People that became entrepreneurs and yes. owning those restaurants.
Right.
Were working as, I guess, busboys and
that's
stuff.
That's right. And servers and cooks in the restaurants at Casa Grisani on East Liberty.
Okay.
And
okay.
we all worked together with Vincenzo, of course, as Vincenzo's restaurants.
Yeah. Is, yeah. Well, that's it's great stuff. Now, tell me about present day. What's it like? I mean, you work. This is a family business because you work
right.
with your wife.
Yes.
Here, and you all must have some sort of ways to get along.
Well, we try to stay at each other's way. You know, she has her what she brings to the table is the culinary art, and what I bring to the table is the customer service side and the management side, and so we each respect each other's strengths and weaknesses and try not to get in each other's way. And you know, when you're married to one another, you know we're first and foremost husband and wife and best friends and the parents of our children. So there's so many things that are come before the business, but the business is our bread and butter. It's what yeah. puts food on the table, so to speak. So
well, you had to sort of have a affinity for it a long time ago. I mean, you ever wanted to do anything else, being in any other industry?
Actually, when I first got out of high school, my dream was photography. I was a photographer. I went to school for first 2 years in photography and underwater biology because I wanted to be an underwater photographer. But to pay my way through college, I worked in restaurants and I became infatuated and with restaurants and I've didn't look back. I changed my major, and that's when I met my wife. And my second 2 years of school was at Florida International University, and we met in the restaurant management program.
Wow. So. Well, that's quite a story, and it's amazing that it keeps up. Now, here at the cafe, I'm going to stick around here and eat lunch. So what are you going to suggest that I have?
Well, my favorite dish is the Tuscan chicken salad. That's one dish on the menu that I actually created myself. It's just a big salad with our fresh greens, which is a mixture of red leaf lettuce and romaine for the crunch. And then it's got portobello mushrooms, roasted red peppers, feta cheese, fresh tomatoes, apples and red onion relish.
Really making me hungry.
And served with a balsamic vinaigrette, which is our Asian sesame dressing, which is a balsamic vinaigrette.
Okay. Well, I may have to order one of those. So we'll wrap it up here, but I am curious about your business. Having a sort of out-of-the-way location like this.
Yes.
And not doing a whole lot of advertising or something. Where do your customers come from?
Our customers generally come from downtown. These are business people that work in and around downtown. And there are, you know, a number of retirees also that frequent the cafe. So we're easily accessible. We're right off of East Broadway, so one block east off of East Broadway and one block west of Barrett Avenue. And so we're near Louisville Stoneware, which is a local attraction. It's the oldest ongoing business in Louisville. It's over 200 years old. It's a notable attraction. And so we partner with Louisville Stoneware with tourism and bus tours and things like that. And we chose this location. We could have gone to Bardstown Road or Baxter Avenue or a place like that, but parking is very scarce. And we didn't want a little boutique restaurant. The cafe seats over 200 people. We have 150 indoors and another 80 outdoors. That's 230 seats.
Wow.
So we needed ample parking to accommodate those seats. And so we found this location. And being close to Louisville Stoneware really was the tip the scales for us that knew that this was a good location.
Yeah, one more question. So this is an old building, so it had to be something before.
Yeah, it originally was a manufacturing facility, Rocky Manufacturing. They made equipment much used in the restaurant business. Matter of fact, Colonel Sanders had been in this building inspecting equipment that Kentucky Fried Chicken was purchasing.
Wow. Well, that's a pretty cool story. So congratulations to you on 20 years with the cafe, and I hope you have 20 more ahead of you.
Well, thank you very much. I sure appreciate it, and it's really a joy meeting you and talking with you.
If you just can't get enough, catch up on the news of the city's restaurant scene every single day by visiting www.eatdrinktalk.net. Steve and Rick share all the latest local scoop from Louisville's restaurants and bars. You can also find old episodes of the show and connect with the guys on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Eat well, my friends. Another episode next week.